welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We just wanted to get in the mood today to talk about fireworks. That is, of course, the finale to the 1812 Overture. Nothing can get me in the mood more than that. By this time tomorrow, though, something else gets you in the mood, and that's watching people gather downtown. Thousands will begin arriving downtown to stake out their spot for the annual Red, White, and Boom fireworks extravaganza of just about this time tomorrow, if not much, much earlier. The expected audience, isn't it? It's usually around somewhere around 500,000, sometimes a lot more. And I want to know if you are a Red, White, and Boom regular. Call us or email us at allsides@wosu.org and tell us why you love Red, White, and Boom. Call us at 614-292-8513. And, of course, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. So if you have a problem with Red, White, and Boom, you can call, too. Because joining us now to talk about the program, what's new, what's not for Red, White, and Boom, is Executive Director Michael Collins. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann. Pleasure to be with you again.
You're kind of a busy guy today.
It's all right. It's fine.
Okay.
It's actually, knock on wood, it's going very well so far.
It's going to be a beautiful day tomorrow.
Yeah, I appreciate all your help with the weather because obviously those that have better contacts than I should control that. But it's, the weather looks spectacular. And it's actually nice today because there's so much work going on and people aren't going to swelter, which has been a, you know, typical of this time of year. So we feel very pleased and very blessed and we're actually anticipating huge crowds as a result.
Any over 500,000?
No, that part I can't tell you.
Yeah.
It really is. It's typically always north of 400,000. And
right.
After that, and it's judged by aerial photographs taken by police and news, and it's kind of how deep are people, so it's an estimation. But if you take that and you combine it with the television and radio audience, it's always over 750,000 between live and those watching on television, et cetera, that at least participate or see the event in some form or fashion.
And even the aerial photographs can't count the people who are inside buildings watching.
No, that doesn't count that at all. There's 250,000 people in our permitted area, and there's around 200,000 that see it from the Berliner Parks, top of Children's Hospital. You know, that environment outside of our permitted environment. And that's what we use as a basis.
How do you plan? How does the number of people that's going to show up affect your planning? I mean, if you don't exactly know, you can estimate after all these years. But if
I hate to say this, but once you get to so many,
yeah.
It's all about traffic patterns. It's all about people flow. It's all about what streets are closed and what you do on those streets. And probably the reason this is the 30th presentation of Red, White, and Boom is because Columbus has done such a good job being good neighbors to themselves. I mean, you know, it's one thing we encourage every year, but if you count 30 years in the numbers, we've had very few incidences. So people moving kind of shoulder to shoulder and following one another is how this event has always been. I mean, we're expanding it now as the areas grow or construction changes, but it's really all about people being good to their neighbors.
If you are just coming on board, my guest is Michael Collins. He's the Executive Director of Red, White, and Boom. If you have questions or comments, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and put your question or comment there. We'd love to hear from you. I guess I'm wondering how you change it up every year and if you think about that when you're planning it to think, okay, what are we going to do different this year? Is that part of the equation?
Yeah, because it's always the question we get asked, Ann, at this time of the year. So what's new?
Okay. I mean, that wasn't a very original.
No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
We've been doing this 13 of the 30 years and it's the same question every year. But there's some things we try to do. Some of it's by changes. You know, 3 years ago when they started the construction on the Scioto Mile and closed Civic Center Drive, everything new was we were moving everything. Now this is our third year of the move, so actually it's actually coming together very well and people know where to go. So now what's new? Well, two things. One is the show is actually – it's going to be higher in the air. It's actually slightly longer with fireworks. There's kind of an extravaganza surprise that's going to be there attached to the show. So we always try to do something different with the show. But the big new things, if you will, is we moved Children's Park, which is significant. It used to be at Battelle Park right across on Marconi. And that's kind of a park that's kind of cut real odd-shaped, and it's hard to work. Children's Park is now the median between Spring and Long from Neil all the way almost to the railroad trestle. It's almost an acre of land, and we have all kinds of booth and activities. And we envision 5,000 to 6,000 kids and their parents in this park from noon to 8 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. And we want to continue to build those family-friendly environments, as well as all the other concession environments. We have 5 stages that are going on. We used to have 4. You know, the entertainment is significant, and it's on Washington Boulevard, and it's on Long Street, and there's 2 on Nationwide Boulevard, and there's 1 in Children's Park, et cetera. So, yeah, we look at those things about what's new, but there's a continuation of a theme or how it's presented, and then what do we do to spruce it up?
Now, 20 years ago when I went to my first Red, White, and Boom,
okay.
I was in a building,
right.
But I wondered, how do you keep that many people entertained for so long before the grand finale of the fireworks? So 20 years ago, it doesn't seem to me that you had that much other entertainment going on.
No, and it was very centered south. It was very Broad Street south.
Right.
Okay, Civic Center Drive all the way down to Main Street. There was a stage. They used Bicentennial Park, and that was stage, and that was the hub of the entire event. There wasn't a Nationwide Arena 20 years ago or an arena district. So as those things unfold, we began to spread to those environments. And now when we had to move 3 years ago and move the fireworks to Vets Memorial, which actually bends it completely around the river, so the face of the show is different.
Right.
It opened up the whole North End, and we lost the South End. Well, this year we have 1 block of Civic Center between Broad and Town that we actually put concessions and beverages on. And next year, when it's all done, we'll go all the way to Main Street again. So we will now wind up with 2 ends. We will now have a north and a south, because we're not going to give up the north that was acquired 3 years ago because of the change. It is extremely effective. It's very helpful for people flow. After the construction on 315 this year, egress will be so much easier.
They'll just find something else to start building.
At least that north flow will be easier. You know, last year we had it going one way. This year we got it going another, and it affects the entrance and the exit ramp so hard. That's our biggest problem. So now we're, you know, the show is really geared north of Broad Street, and we're reopening south, and next year it'll be both south and north.
Everyone seems to enjoy the location, how the fireworks have been relocated since the bridge construction began.
Right.
Are they going to stay there or what?
We still need continuous cooperation. Through 11, they're going to stay, because the agreements that were made were through 11, and that was to make sure that Bicentennial Park and the whole Scioto Mile project could be completed. Right now, I think our board is very interested in leaving them where they are. But again, you know, you have the county and Vets Memorial have to extend an agreement that allows us to shut Vets Memorial and use the back of that and so forth. And those things have to go through the county commissioners and the Vets Memorial board.
Is this like a job you do all year round?
Yeah, this board meets 11 months out of 12. We will do a postmortem, if you will, or a debrief the 29th or the end of July. We will take August off. We will have a half-day planning meeting with the board in September, and away we go. And they meet once a month. And I mean, the fundraising and the organizational stuff is, yeah, it's year-round. It's not every day year-round, but it's year-round.
614-292-8513. We're only going to have Michael Collins, Executive Director of Red, White, and Boom, on for the first segment of the show today. So if you have a question or comment for him about how this incredible tradition in Columbus, now I think after 30 years, it's fair to call it a tradition, right?
And Columbus makes it that way. Yeah. I mean, you look at this attendance. It's been constant at this level since since probably the 5th or 88 or around that time. It just kind of mushroomed, and it's been constant.
What was the original intent? Was it – who thought – does anybody even know anymore? What were they thinking?
Jim Maroos was attached to it. He's not in town anymore. He was at Mid-American Federal at the time, a bank, and WNCI was involved. But I think it was, you know, what are we doing on July 4th in Columbus, Ohio? And we're not really doing anything. So they put together a small fireworks show that lasted about 7 minutes that had about 30,000 people watching it. And it was in Bicentennial Park. And back then they were literally – almost, you know, hand lighting them one at a time kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since about 88, it really blossomed or mushroomed into 250,000 and 300,000 and 350 and that kind of thing, and throughout the 90s. But this number has stayed. This attendance number has been constant for the 13 years we've been doing it, and when Cindy Violet did it before us. And the parade has over 100,000 people watching it by itself.
The size of the crowd got to be kind of a turnoff for some people in the early 90s. Before you really started doing a lot of this extra entertainment and these extra activities, particularly for kids
right.
who were running around like banshees half the time, you know, back in the early days. What What do you say to people who haven't been to Red, White, and Boom for 15 years?
What I really say to them is come before the parade starts, first of all. Secondly, is decide if you kind of pick your area. You want to be on the, if you're on the west side and you want to venture up towards Washington Boulevard, kind of pick and map out your area where you're going to watch it from and do that in advance. There really are enough parking places if you count all the garages and all the street lots and that kind of thing. And be prepared to walk 4 to 6 blocks getting there and leaving. And it's like anything else. The closer you are to the center of the city, the longer you wait to leave. So if you're willing to walk 8 blocks and you're on a street parking lot, you know, a surface lot, you'll actually get out quicker. It'll take you, you know, 20 minutes to walk there, mm-hmm. but you'll actually leave quicker.
And you won't be sitting in a car.
Yeah, and you won't be sitting in a garage.
Now, you do have entertainment after the fireworks, to kind of chill people out.
Till 11:30, actually. Yeah. It's a whole hour. We bring a whole group on back to every stage, obviously the exception of Children's Park, which closes at 8. And that's to give people entertainment and let things clear up.
Phil, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks a lot. A little bit of the history of Red, White, and Boom. My wife's best friend, Lee Jordan, who was an anchor up in Cleveland, was the promotion manager of WNCI back in 1980, and I can recall vividly when they came up with the idea to do the fireworks, and even the day that they named it Red, White, and Boom. Harold Hinson, the late Harold Hinson, was the general manager at the time. I don't remember the other promotional folks, but it was Lee and the promotion staff that really got this thing off the launching pad.
Why? Did they just think it was boring in Columbus on 4th of July and you needed to do something? Or was it just kind of a commercial type of venture or what? Do you remember?
Well, the station, of course, you know, at that time was, I think, almost number one, if not number one in Columbus. Right. They were always trying to come up with different promotional ideas. And, of course, summertime's a big time, you know, to have radio promotions.
Mm-hmm.
People are listening outdoor. You know, it's a big market, you know, for hot dog, beer, brats, and all of that.
Love it.
So it was just part of their ongoing planning, and they happened to hit it big that time.
All righty. Well, Phil, thanks for your call.
Yeah,
appreciate
Phil, tell your wife to tell Lee Jordan that Mike Collins says hi. You're absolutely right. She was instrumental in making all this happen.
I will definitely pass the word along.
Thank you.
Take care. One more question as far as the transportation issue. Is COTA pitching in at all? Are they involved in getting people as close as possible?
It's their busiest day of the year in terms of ridership, number one. They actually bring in every employee. They use everything that's got wheels on it that can move. there are extra buses. There are extra drivers. Last year they carried over 50,000 people. Okay. That's 50,000 tickets, so that's both ways. They're a huge factor, and I encourage people to use COTA. Go to that park and ride that's nearby. Yeah, you can go onto the redwhiteandboom.org site and click on the COTA, or you can go to the COTA site. There are all the routes, and they do a great job. I mean, they get back downtown at 11:30 to take the second load. I mean, we have worked with them very, very closely, at least the 13 years that we've been here, and it's a very good partnership. And I encourage you to use it. I mean, how much quicker are you going to leave anyway?
Right. You don't have to go through all the stress. Michael Collins, Executive Director of Red, White, and Boom, thanks for joining us. Thanks for squeezing us in on such a busy, busy day.
And we thank you for all you do all the time on All Sides.
Take care. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to meet the Vice President of Phantom Fireworks and get into the good, the bad, I guess bad and the ugly and the good. Bye. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. And join us at 1 o'clock this afternoon for On Point. One in every three children in America is obese. We'll take a look at why kids are packing on the pounds and what can we do about it. That discussion on Point at 1 o'clock this afternoon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. July 4th on WOSU-TV at 8, America's biggest and brightest birthday party, a Capitol 4th, will air live from the West Lawn of the U.S. Capitol. Join host Jimmy Smits with performances by some of the country's best-known musicians. Enjoy a spectacular fireworks display in tribute to America's 234th birthday. And a favorite tradition of the 1812 Overture, complete with live cannon fire provided by the United States Army Presidential Salute Battery. Join us for the celebration beginning at 8 on July 4th on WOSU-TV. Currently 69 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today and a high of 75, clear skies tonight, a low of 54. All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's called the Liar's Law, the state restriction on so-called backyard firework sales in Ohio. You can buy them here, well, not here, but in Ohio, but you can't shoot them off in Ohio. And purchasers are required to sign a statement promising to remove the fireworks from the state within a certain period. Few follow through, and most disregard the ban on shooting them off. If you know that, if you live in a neighborhood where there is a purchaser. This weekend is a big one for backyard fireworks, both in explosions and injuries. In a few minutes, we're going to meet Phantom Fireworks Vice President Bill Weimer. He's a frequent commentator on the issue of ending the law. Later on, we'll welcome to the show a representative from Prevent Blindness Ohio and also a pediatrician from Nationwide Children's Hospital to talk about the dangers and why they believe even sparklers should be banned. Right now, Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio's State House Bureau is with us. Joe, thanks for coming to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on, Ann.
Why the talk about changing the fireworks law in Ohio has been going on, at least I can only really vouch for the last 20 years, but since I started covering the legislature, what's the holdup, or is it not a holdup, it's just an avoidance issue?
I don't think there's a will for this to crack down on fireworks. We haven't seen any legislation that's really come out to try to make fireworks illegal or ban them in Ohio. In fact, we saw the opposite. If you remember the huge fire in the fireworks store in Scottstown.
1996.
After that, the legislature addressed the issue of these fireworks stores and actually passed some legislation that beefed up the safety features in these stores. But when that was going through the process, that bill was going through the process, at first it contained some language that would have opened up and would have allowed the sale of expanded fireworks in Ohio. It passed one chamber, and then all of a sudden the opponents of these fireworks got busy and got lobbying with legislators, and that was taken out. Eventually, but we've seen the legislators go that direction, but we have not seen the will to ban fireworks in Ohio, and that's a lot of money. Also, you know, people at the 4th of July, they view it as a rite almost. You know, it's part of their, a lot of people have made fireworks part of their family entertainment. They see no real danger in it. And, you know, there's the nightmare of enforcement. I mean, the police really have a hard time enforcing the current law. If you ban fireworks, is it really, you know, are people going to drive out of state to get them? We might see that especially in Cincinnati and Cleveland where people live close to the borders, and then Ohio loses the tax dollars off that. So, you know, there are a myriad of reasons why they haven't done anything so far with this.
Yeah, when you talk about enforcement, you can read stories and hear about interviews with law enforcement officials who say, we just give them warnings. In other words, they can catch people doing it and breaking the law, but they don't invoke the full penalty of the law.
Well, yeah, and part of the problem is you have to get into a lot of investigation sometimes when you're dealing with fireworks. You've got to figure out who exactly set it off, where did the fireworks come from. You know, it's a lot of work for something that basically doesn't have a very stiff penalty to begin with.
About $1,000.
It does, but that's rarely enforced. I mean, if you look at when cases do go to court, people, they really don't get the book thrown at them, especially the first time around. So it tends, you know, around the 4th of July, there are a lot of warnings issued, but we don't see a lot of crackdown on it.
I imagine that given the contentious nature of this issue, you know, when it gets down to it, the lawmakers are glad they're on on summer break when a lot of the fireworks are going off and when a lot of the accidents occur.
Exactly. They're always on summer break when all this action occurs. And, you know, what would be interesting is if we see some lawmakers who get caught with fireworks and get a warning or whatever. We haven't seen that, but you never know. That might come up because, you know, there are a lot of people who are using these fireworks. Let's face it. Anyone in Columbus on any street on the 4th of July, you're going to hear fireworks, neighborhood fireworks, and oftentimes it's your neighbors. And these are, you know, people who are otherwise law-abiding citizens, but this has kind of been one of those laws that people ignore. And without tough enforcement and without a crackdown on it, I think we're going to see more of it.
Thank you, Joe Ingles. We're going to turn now to Bill Weimer. Phantom Fireworks Parent Company, BJ Allen Company in Youngstown, is a major distributor of retail fireworks. It's, I think, one of the big three in the United States. Bill Weimer, he's a frequent commentator on the issue of ending the Liar's Law, or as Bill, welcome to the show, as you said, updating an outdated law. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Good to be here.
When you say that fireworks laws in Ohio are outdated, what do you mean by that?
Well, there's been a lot of progress with the products themselves. The products are tested, much like electronics are tested by Underwriters Laboratory. The products have improved. The firework companies are being much more proactive with reference to getting the safety message out there. Injuries are down. And we think that the imperative for states to protect citizens from themselves just isn't there. We've undertaken a great safety campaign this year. We, for the first time, we did a pilot program in three cities where we actually conducted firework safety classes, how to use the product safely. We did a video this year on how to use the product safely. So we think that the more and more that the firework companies get out there, get the safety message out there, the more the injuries will be reduced, and the more likely it is that people will have a good, solid, safe 4th of July.
You're saying the safety campaign, is that in Ohio?
We actually did two in Ohio. We conducted one class in Youngstown, one in Canton. The third pilot program was in Florida, Daytona Beach.
Now, you've said in the past that it's difficult to run a public safety ad in a state where it's illegal. Why is that?
Well, typically, stations will not advertise anything that's not permitted. They won't do public safety PSAs about fireworks safety if fireworks are not legal in that state. We have those issues with advertising as well as these public service announcements, and particularly fire service, fire departments will not get on the bandwagon and do fireworks safety press conferences if the fireworks are not legal in the state.
Because it implies sort of a tacit approval.
Sure.
Approval.
Exactly.
When you've talked about statistics, well, you've said that injuries are going down. You've often quote one that relates the number of injuries to the poundage of fireworks sold. And you've been criticized for that, as people have said it's misleading because doesn't weight overrepresent heavy devices and underrepresent the more numerous light devices out there?
Well, when I talk about safety, I'm talking about raw number of injuries. I'm not talking about percentages or any accounting mumbo-jumbo. But the fact is that in 1994, when the firework industry organization first started testing the products, there were 12,500 injuries nationally reported by Consumer Product Safety Commission. 16 years later, this year, Consumer Product Safety Commission reported 8,800 injuries. Well, that's down significantly from 12,500. And at the same time, during the same 15 or 16 years, we've almost doubled the use of the products. So clearly, the use is up, the injuries are down. And I maintain you compare that to any other product with risk, ATVs, trampolines, motorcycles, jet skis. When use goes up, injuries go up. This idea with fireworks of use going up, and I'm talking consumer fireworks, obviously, mm-hmm. use going up, injuries going down, pretty unique.
You've said that when Indiana legalized the regulated use of fireworks in 2006, that tax revenue increased and that there were more jobs for people. How does that work? Because we already can sell fireworks in Ohio, so how would the revenue increase if you could now use them in Ohio?
You talked about this liar's law,
mm-hmm.
and people must sign a statement indicating whether you're an Ohio resident or not that you're going to remove the products from the state within 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That puts off a lot of buyers. There are some people who readily buy the products and willfully violate the law and use them, but there are a lot of people in Ohio who simply do not want to violate the law and won't buy the products. So our experience in Indiana, which is a very similar situation to Ohio, where the products were sold but not used. When the products were fully legalized in Indiana, sales went up the first year by about 30%. So you're going to get more tax revenue. There are probably, at least 30-40% additional firework dealers in Indiana today than there were before the law was passed. And uniquely, and I make no thesis out of this, it's just fact, since 2006, each year the number of firework injuries in Indiana has gone down.
You're advertising on the radio this season, is that right?
Yes.
Is that different?
I'm different. I'm not sure I understand.
Have you advertised on the radio in the past?
Oh, yes.
So you do advertise, and the radio stations will run it, even though it's not legal to use it in Ohio.
Right.
And
right.
That's not been a problem.
But in Ohio, you have a legal sales mechanism. So that part is legal. But in some states where fireworks are not legal, they won't accept advertising for out-of-state vendors, and they certainly will not do public service announcements.
Is there a state or are there state laws out there that you would think are models for what you would like done in Ohio?
I think Indiana.
Okay. Are you there? Oh, I'm sorry. We just lost Bill Reimer. But Joe, you're there, aren't you?
I am here.
Well, I think we were trying to lose you, Joe.
Well, gee, thanks.
But tell me, there's 45 other states.
There are. And you know, the laws on this range vary. They're different in all different states. I mean, you've got some states where they do have an outright ban. You've got some states where it's all legal. Just go ahead and do it. And then you've got states like ours that kind of have this, you know, where you can buy it, but you can't shoot them off there, or you can only buy certain kinds, that sort of thing.
You know, the argument that Bill Weimer makes about revenue, tax revenue from the sales of fireworks could be compelling in a year when we're facing a $6 billion to $8 billion budget shortfall. I know it's probably a drop in the bucket to that, but is it more possibly persuasive this time around?
Well, we saw it with gambling, didn't we? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Ohio voters consistently said they didn't want those casinos in Ohio, didn't want them. And when the economy got bad, maybe we do want them. So, you know, who knows? The thing is, Ohio voters have really not weighed in on this issue. It has not been a front burner issue. And, you know, the odd thing here is I talked with, I think you're going to have Dr. Gary Smith on the show
right
here a little later, but I talked with him earlier this week, and I said, you know, he wants an all-out ban on fireworks.
On sparklers.
On everything.
Right.
Sparklers, any kind of fireworks, smoke bomb, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
And he says they're really dangerous. And I said, well, then why don't we see doctors out there really down at the State House lobbying on this issue like they do for car seats, like they do for other public safety issues?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we saw when the secondhand smoke issue came up, we saw doctors coming in off the street, you know, testifying in large groups about that.
Right.
And yet, when it comes to fireworks, we hear the doctors say, hey, we don't like them, there needs to be a ban. But as far as actually having some sort of concerted lobbying effort that makes the lawmakers take notice, that doesn't happen.
Joe Ingles from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Ann.
And I hope you have a happy holiday.
You too.
Take care. Okay. Bill Reimer, sorry about that. Thanks for
no
coming
problem.
Back to the show. What are you doing to get the law changed? We know your company and the industry as a whole has contributed a lot to political campaigns, but nothing is ever done. What do you think is the holdup in Ohio?
You mentioned the lobby back in 1997. I think Joe talked about the increased safety laws and what have you. The full legalization of consumer fireworks passed the House overwhelmingly. It passed the Senate committee that was reviewing it, and then Governor Voinovich at the time was running for Senate, and he indicated that he would veto the bill.
You mean he was running for governor at the time?
He was governor running for the Senate.
Oh,
that
okay.
was during the transition.
Gotcha. Okay.
He was the sitting governor.
Yep.
Announced he was running for Senate, and the anti-fireworks lobby talked to the governor and convinced him that that he should veto the bill. He announced he would veto the bill, and the legalization piece was taken out before the conference.
Was his reasoning simply safety?
I did not discuss it with Senator Voinovich. I don't know his reason, but the anti-firework lobby consists primarily of the fire service, the pediatricians, ophthalmologists, and emergency room physicians. And that's the group that that lobbied the governor.
It's a compelling group.
Oh, there's no question, and I'm the first one to tell you. I'm a father and a grandfather, and I'm the first one to tell you one injury is too many. But rather than work to ban something that Americans clearly love, we believe the proper effort should be safety. And we're proud of the effort we've made. There are still injuries. We are still working our fingers to the bone to try and improve that safety record. But the fact is, it has improved, and it's improved because of the efforts of the industry. The pediatricians, ophthalmologists, and emergency room physicians have not helped on the safety issue. They worked to ban it.
Back after that 1996 tragedy, as 8 or 9 people were killed in that, it was horrible.
Right.
Down in Scottstown, what changed as far as how you sell fireworks in the state of Ohio?
The requirements for the showrooms, we call the store showrooms, the requirements changed radically. There were some serious design flaws in that Scottstown building. Mm-hmm. The fire suppression system was not working. The aisles dumped into walls rather than dumping into a doorway area. All that was changed. The requirements were changed. Sprinklers are mandatory. Smoke evacuation systems are mandatory. The fire marshal has to approve the physical layout of the aisles so that aisles don't end in a blind alley. There are just many, many provisions that were added. Security. There must be a uniform security officer at a fireworks store 14 days before and 2 days after the 4th of July.
What about children? Are they still allowed in?
They're allowed in. Our recommendation is that children enjoy the products from a distance. We don't believe children should handle sparklers. We believe adults should handle the products. Children should watch. These sparklers burn in excess of 1,000 degrees. And a rational person would no more put a pack of matches or a blowtorch in a child's hand, and they certainly shouldn't put a sparkler in a child's hand.
You know, there's always, around the 4th of July, though, one other thing that happens besides fireworks is the imbibing of alcoholic beverages. And sometimes people turn into boneheads when they get drunk and or they've been drinking, and they let kids do crazy things, and they do the crazy things themselves. It's kind of the combination of the holiday and the fireworks is part of the problem, isn't it?
It is, and we recommend that you have a designated shooter, just like you have a designated driver. I mean, these products burn to function. You have to respect that, and there should be a sober, responsible adult in charge. No question about that.
Bill Weimer, Vice President, Phantom Fireworks, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
And it's my pleasure, and I hope everybody has a wonderful holiday and a safe one.
You as well.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we will be with the director of Nationwide Children's Hospital Center for Injury Research and Policy, and also Sherry Williams, president and CEO of Prevent Blindness Ohio. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can always email us at allsides@wosu.org with the questions, comments, observations about the use of fireworks in the state of Ohio. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. NPR News.
My family and I moved here 3 years ago to take jobs at OSU working for the Department of Dance. The great thing about the local programming here at WOSU is it's taught us a lot about Columbus. But the national NPR programming, it gives us a sense of home in a new place. My name is Michael Wall, and WOSU is my source for the broader community.
And you're listening to WOSU 820, NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour 2 of All Sides will be here. And we'll hear why spending time in nature is essential to our health and the well-being for both adults and children. With representatives of the group Leave No Child Inside, the Central Ohio Collaborative. That discussion begins at 11 right here on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from the Sherrington Group Financial Planners and Investment Consultants, providing timely guidance, education, and options to complex issues affecting clients' futures.
69 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:40 this morning, sunshine today and a high of 75. Clear skies tonight and a low of 54 degrees, sunshine for Friday and a high of 78. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us for our grand finale of the fireworks show today, Dr. Gary Smith. He's director of Nationwide Children's Hospital Center for Injury Research and Policy. Welcome to the show, Dr. Smith.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Also joining us is Sherry Williams. She's president and CEO of Prevent Blindness Ohio. Sherry, glad you could be with us today.
Thank you.
The most common injury is to the eyes. Why is that? Dr. Smith?
Well, we see each year in this country a number of people taken to hospital emergency departments. And, of course, the most serious injuries, as you mentioned, are to the eyes and also burns. It has to do with the nature of the product. We are especially concerned about bottle rockets. When it comes to eye injuries, they account for about half of the eye injuries. And if you've ever seen one of those used, they're erratic in their path. From the moment you ignite them, they're out of control. And so that's why we see so many of those injuries and why we're so concerned about that particular type of firework.
Sherry, sparklers are a big problem, but they're legal as can be in Ohio.
Yes, they are indeed. And we tend, those of us who use sparklers, to give them to small children. They're the largest cause of fireworks injuries to children under the age of five. And actually, they are the cause of the second most common cause of fireworks injuries, with over 1,000 injuries caused across the country last year that were treated in emergency rooms by sparklers. So obviously our cause is that fireworks shouldn't be used at all, and certainly sparklers are included in that mix and should never be given to children.
I don't know if you heard Bill Reimer from Phantom Fireworks on earlier, but he makes the salient point, and it's not just with fireworks, but the idea that when something's illegal and people use it anyway, the safety, the usage of it is going to be less safe because there's going to be less support for putting out, teaching safety with fireworks because it's illegal. And it would be sort of this tacit approval issue. What do you say to that, Sherry?
Well, if you look at the safety instructions on a package of that encloses a firework that you might purchase, the safety instructions say something like have a pail of water nearby, ignite, turn, and run the other way. I just, that might be a point that Bill made, but I just don't think that there's any safe way, and I think my friend Dr. Smith would agree, any safe way to use a firework. They should be completely and totally avoided.
I think this is a good example where a slogan tends to stop thinking, and people will hear somebody say that and say, oh, gee, that makes sense. But unfortunately, the data just simply don't support that. There's been studies in the past that show that states that have absolutely no restrictions on consumer fireworks have injury rates that are seven times that of jurisdictions that have restrictions, and the residential fire rates are 50 times that of areas that restrict fireworks. And so this whole idea of making it illegal that doesn't work is baloney. We've actually got really good data to show that the opposite is true.
So you're saying that even though there might be sort of that prohibition aspect to it, that people are going to use them no matter what, that if you made them legal, it would be all the more people would use them. And,
that's what the data support, absolutely. And, the industry does come out each year, and you can go to their website. It's been there for years about how the number of pounds of fireworks that have been sold has increased, and try to point to the fact that this indicates that there's not a problem, that fireworks are safe. What is unfortunate is that this is just a cynical misrepresentation of data to make a profit. And what we find is that if you think of this as a public health problem, and I would liken it to something like West Nile virus or some infectious disease, we would take absolutely no comfort to know that, the mosquito population is doubled, therefore we don't have to worry about West Nile virus. In fact, during the month around the 4th of July, over 200 people go to the hospital emergency department a day. That's one every 7 minutes. And if you look at just the kids, that's a child every 18 minutes in this country around the 4th of July. And if those were a child going into the emergency department every 18 minutes for West Nile virus, there would be an outcry across this country. This would be front page news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've become numb to it. We think of it differently than other public health problems. And that's why we have not been successful in being able to reduce the number of injuries.
You know, Joe Ingles, who was on a little while ago from Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, she made the point that I think she talked to you, Dr. Smith, but that why don't physicians get out there as a group like they would for, you know, car seats for children, that kind of a thing, buckling up, whatever the issue might be, and fight tooth and nail for this?
Well, in fact, there is a very strong movement. A number of years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics and the National Fire Protection Association began what is now called the Alliance Against Consumer Fireworks. It now includes more than 20 national medical, public health, and fire organizations. And each year, we're out there trying to inform the public about the dangers of backyard fireworks. The message is simple. These products are inherently dangerous. There's no safe way to use them. Every legally available type of firework has been associated with serious injury or death. The way to enjoy the 4th, the way to keep your family together and spend it and enjoy the nation's holiday is go to a public display done by professionals. Leave backyard fireworks alone.
You know, the public displays, Sherry, have gotten so fabulous. I mean, just absolutely amazing. I mean, remember back, you know, in the olden days, you know, they were red and white and blue and not even barely blue. I mean, it was just so different than it is now. And I wonder, has the fabulousness of the fireworks, the legal public fireworks, part of the problem? It tempts people to do it themselves in their backyard.
Well, Dr. Smith may know more about the science behind that, but certainly having the option of enjoying the beauty of fireworks in a public display that is put on by licensed professionals is certainly considerably more safe than setting off fireworks by amateurs in the backyard, which is really the cause that we've taken up, is to direct people to the public displays, but to caution them that they can too be dangerous if folks don't follow the safety rules and keep the proper distance from those that are exhibiting the public displays.
We have a few more minutes left before the show is over. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and let us know what you think about fireworks and legalizing fireworks in the state of Ohio, or I should say backyard fireworks. I guess, Sherry, what I was getting at with that is fireworks displays are so magnificent now. They're very common. The public fireworks displays are very mm-hmm. common. Hasn't that kind of normalized the notion that fireworks themselves are much safer than they used to be?
You know, I don't know of, and Dr. Smith, you may know of any research in that area. I'm not aware of any research in that area, and I guess, you know, trying to just think as an individual who enjoys the public display and the most fantastic here in Central Ohio every year. Our mm-hmm. city does a wonderful job, and Mike Collins and his group, that I guess as an individual, I'm certainly not tempted to go into my backyard and shoot off fireworks because I've enjoyed Red, White, and Boom or my community display in Bexley. But Dr. Smith may know more about whether or not that would be an indication of, you know, the increased use of the backyard fireworks.
Yeah, the commonness of these fabulous public displays. Do you think that has any effect on people's relative fear or sense of caution around fireworks?
I don't think it would cause them to go to the backyard and use fireworks. I think it actually gives them a safer option. So I think, you know, if there's even one person that's tempted now to use backyard fireworks, the overwhelming majority of people will do that instead of using backyard fireworks. So I think it's a safer option. I think it's a good option. I mean, I can tell you one other thing that's worth mentioning here to parents mm-hmm. especially, and that is that we've done studies looking at firework-related injuries to children nationally and then looking at specific hospital data as well. And in all these studies, we found that the child, when injured children are seen in emergency departments, about one-fourth of the time, 25% of the time, the child is a bystander. They're not even handling the firework. And so this notion that parents can do the igniting and children are safe is a myth. I mean, just even being near where fireworks are being used puts kids at risk. In addition, the studies we've done show that over half of the time when a child's brought in the emergency department, an adult was right there at the moment of injury watching the child, supervising them. And what I hear as a physician when they come to the emergency department is, and every time it's, doctor, I can't believe this happened. It happened so quickly. By the time I had a chance to react, it had already happened. It was too late. I mean, these things happen so quickly. And so supervision is also a myth. In other words, don't not supervise your child, but don't fall into the trap to think that just because you're supervising him, now you can use fireworks safely. Just because the child isn't handling the fireworks, they can use it safely. Or you can use them safely. Those are myths, and so we have to dispel those and say really the only safe way to enjoy fireworks is not to use backyard fireworks, but to go to public displays.
When a child comes into the hospital from injuries from fireworks, outside of sparklers and the other legal types of, you know, the smoke bombs and that kind of thing, but when they come in and they've been harmed by a firework that's illegal in Ohio to set off in Ohio, do you call the police?
You know, we don't have a mandatory reporting for that, and so we don't. But if there's any concern about this being a case of either neglect or abuse, we are mandated to do that. And so, you know, that is something we do. We work very closely with the health departments and with law enforcement. And so whenever there's a concern, we will bring that up, yes.
It's kind of on a case-by-case basis?
It is. It is.
Sherry, wouldn't mandatory reporting requirements influence some people to not use backyard fireworks illegally?
Well, again, I don't know if that would make any difference. I think it's really, as Dr. Smith has also said, it's really an educational process and, you know, kind of bouncing off the data that he shared in regard to bystanders. Over half of the injuries to fireworks are to innocent bystanders mm-hmm. minding their own business, and you know, many of them are children. I'm getting ready to make my 4th of July call to my good friend Jack Shannon, who lost his son due to fireworks back in 1988 when Michael was only 3 years and 10 months old. They had purchased they were at a family reunion in Grayson, Kentucky, but had purchased some fireworks from Ohio, brought it across the border. His relatives had. He was just standing 40 feet away from the display that one of the relatives was setting off a multiple shell device. Little Michael was standing between his legs over 40 feet away from this missile device that was completely legal to use in Kentucky and completely legal to sell in Ohio. And the missile tipped over, and it hit his head, causing an open skull fracture and severe brain burn. Michael remained conscious for an entire day, aware of the pain and the injury. And the rocket had damaged the area of the brain that controls the eye muscles, so his major complaint was that he couldn't see. Mm-hmm. He died the next day from the extensive damage. And I have to tell you, my friend Jack, his father, to this day, and it's how many years later, it's 20 years later, can barely stand this time of year and has had a whole different approach to life because of this loss at such a young age. They were innocent bystanders. They, you know, had nothing to do with this display. And this is all too often the case.
Why don't you push for the tougher regulations that you want? Why isn't there must be somebody in the legislature that would introduce a bill?
Well, at this point, there is a ban on the use of fireworks, and we have.
Yes, but it's not enforced, and there's no reporting requirement if a child shows up at a hospital injured by an illegal firework.
Well, if there is a legislator out there who we have been educating for the last, I don't know how many years, since 1986, that would like to sponsor legislation, certainly I know that the coalition that involves Prevent Blindness Ohio and Children's Hospital, the Academy of Pediatrics, would be, very willing to move forward in discussing the possibilities. At this point, the State House has only passed a handful, I think less than 10 mm-hmm. pieces of legislation.
Well, that's a whole other show.
Yeah, and there hasn't been a willing participant in terms of of sponsorship of legislation, but certainly we have all fought very hard to make sure that use of fireworks in Ohio has remained illegal, and many attempts by the industry to, you know, lift and more liberalize, you know, that piece of the current legislation. So certainly we're always on watch and are very active in terms of keeping the use and discharge of the 1.4G or the backyard fireworks illegal in Ohio.
Of course, they've only acted on about 10 bills, but they introduce a lot more than that. And when's the last time you had anything introduced to the legislature? Was it after the 1996 tragedy?
In terms of fireworks?
Yeah.
There was opposition that we have posed as a group and a coalition to a 1997 piece of legislation that would have lifted the ban on use of backyard fireworks, and there was another attempt by the industry in the, I think, early 2000s, mm-hmm. 2000, probably for the bicentennial, that we also opposed, and in both cases were successful in maintaining the current status, which makes it illegal to discharge 1.4G or backyard fireworks in Ohio.
We only have about 90 seconds left, but we do have an email, and if you can respond to it, we're a little tight on time, but the listener writes, perhaps there's a middle ground for this issue. We have hunting, boating, driving, ATV, firearms handling, home, workplace, and other safety courses that work well to lower injuries and accidents. How about requiring handlers or at least one person being required to hold a safety certification? The cost would be paid for by the sale of fireworks. The property owner, renter, or lessee would be held liable if the handler is not identified. I guess what the listener is suggesting is, what I'm wondering is, aren't there ways to toughen the laws without necessarily banning everything? Just make it, well, they already are banned to be set off, but toughen the laws and make people more aware of it.
You know, I can respond to that in that, you know, I think education is part of the sort of array of strategies we have to use to attack public health problems. But unfortunately, education alone is usually not that effective.
Okay.
And so we have not had very great success in any of the examples that the writer gave in reducing firearms or ATV-related okay. injuries because of these training courses.
Thank you to Dr. Gary Smith of Nationwide Children's Hospital and also Sherry Williams of Prevent Blindness Ohio. I appreciate your help today.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
And I
Thank
hope
you.
Everybody has a safe and wonderful 4th of July holiday this year. That's all we have time for on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.